Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the world's most fantastic podcast. That's right, it's Uncanny Treks covering the John Hickman Fantastic Four run, and it is the penultimate episode of our coverage of the John Hickman run, although don't worry, faithful listeners, we'll have three other Fantastic Four episodes we'll spit out for you, or I guess more precisely, future Foundation episodes. But anyway, I am Bob in Cascadia, that is Matt in the Southland. Tonight we are talking Fantastic Four by Hickman, Volume 6, Foundation, issues number 605, 605.1, and 606 through 611. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
I always love it when they give us one of those .1 issues, Bob.
Yeah, that seems to have mostly died, to which I can only say good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree 100%.
Yeah, although I am very happy, and it took them a long time to finally do this, but I'm very happy that we now have legacy numbering. I think I know at Marvel and maybe at DC, where whatever the number of the volume is, you also usually have the overall number of issues about the character. And I think that's right. Not that there are many comic book stores anymore, and not that there are great back issue collections, some of the ones that still exist, but I'm sure it makes filing those a lot easier for collectors and for comic shop employees.
Oh, yeah, and I think, why would you not want the numbering to be traditional so you have the higher numbers? I guess lower number comics sell better than issue one and stuff, but is that really a thing anymore?
Yeah, I guess I have some sympathy for the idea of accessibility, because God knows American superhero comics do need more accessibility, but I honestly think that has a lot more to do with where they're sold than it does about the numbering, right?
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah. All right.
Let's break into this, Bob. Let's look at issue number 605, End of the Line.
Yeah, and just to say, this has art by Ron Garney, who's also going to do the art, I believe, on 606. Yeah, that's Garney, too. Matt, do you recognize Garney's name or art?
Not really, no.
Okay, he's done a lot of things. He's been around since the 90s. The two things I'm most associated with, he didn't do all of these runs, but he did parts. He did major parts of them. Jason Aaron on Wolverine, and then Mark Waid on Captain America back in the 90s. All right, so what's the plot for End of the Line, Matt?
So, Bob, the plot of End of the Line, Reed and Nathaniel travel to the future to see what they've done to the timeline. And there's one interesting line, Bob, right at the beginning of the issue. Reed and Nathaniel get in their time machine. They shoot back, and Nathaniel says, "I hate that I wasn't there enough when you were younger, but you've got to admit, this is much better than playing catch." And then it shows the future, and it's all space travel, and people flying cars and stuff. Lots of billboards. Does that seem right?
I mean, for me, certainly yes. I think I would rather go to the future than play catch. But on the other hand, it is a little in tension with the rest of the issue, right? Whereas we keep having Nathaniel trying to, and this will be my dialogue of the week at the end, but we keep having Nathaniel trying to discourage Reed from going further, and Reed keeps jumping 1,000 years in the future.
Yep, sure does. We find out some very interesting things about the future.
Yeah, yeah. And at the first jump, Matt, they show us that they're using Herbie as a time probe. Do you like all-purpose Herbie?
Yeah, sure. I mean, they can invent whatever they want. I didn't understand. They wanted Herbie out there so they could collect data, right, on what was going on. That was
yeah.
their reasoning.
Yeah,
they can't like go out there because they disrupt the timeline. Is that it?
I don't think it's disrupt the timeline. I think it's maybe they're more the vibe I got was they were more worried about consequences to themselves
okay.
Or about their ability to continue traveling or to get back. That's at least how I read it. Yeah, but because I think
the time travel to the future got much more complex than what I'm used to. Why do we need a robot to shoot through an invisible field? Okay.
Well, I don't think Hickman stories generally have your back to the future sense of type causality.
Yeah, they don't like the easy to follow back to the future type of causality. They like the complicated, you make it up in your own brain.
Well, yeah, I think the idea is that time travel is complicated, but being in the past or future isn't necessarily complicated.
Yeah, it is whatever you want it to be, folks.
Which is the title of the last collection.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in the first, one of the things that they do here is they jump millennium. Right. So first they show up in the 31st century, and in the 31st century, Earth has spread out into the galaxy, and it's allied with both the Shi'ar and the Badoon, who we know the Shi'ar, and we've talked a little bit about the Badoon and their relation to the Inhumans in this run. And they're allied against the Kree and the Skrull. The Kree have defeated the Skrull and enslaved them, and there aren't many left. And so we have the Baxter buildings instead of the Baxter building. The Future Foundation seems to be functioning rather like the Legion of Superheroes Academy. And we have a Fantastic Four still rocking with Franklin and Ben as the two constants. And then we have a Fire Lord looking guy and a Spider Woman looking gal as the other two members.
All right. So I'm going to assume that is Fire Lord, Bob. Because isn't Fire Lord was a herald to Galactus, so he lives a long time.
I don't know, man. It doesn't look that much like Fire Lord. I mean, it looks sort of like Fire Lord, but not that much.
I mean, he's even got the stick and everything.
He does have the stick. Fire Lord was a herald of Galactus, and we had an action figure of him in the 90s. That said, I guess being a herald of Galactus makes you live longer. I never thought about it, but probably it does, but was Fire Lord even one for that long? So become one again? I don't know. Maybe.
Doesn't Galactus just transformed him into Fire Lord, I believe. I don't know who the Fire Lord is without the Fire Lord powers.
That's probably right, but well, there's a few key Fantastic Four runs I've focused on, and beyond that, I've let the comic drift past me.
Gotcha.
So, that's the that's the 31st century. And this is also the point where we have Reed say this to his father, that apparently Ben doesn't age in his rock form. And so a side effect of the serum that he suspected, but now he feels confirmed, is that Ben only ages when he's out of the rock form. Although I guess now that I think about it, maybe the wording is a little ambiguous. Was he aging before the serum and it's the serum that makes him so long-lived, or was it the cosmic radiation? And if anything, the serum is hastening his decline. I guess that's a little ambiguous. But anyway, it's a little bit, Reed, maybe you should have told Ben this already, buddy.
Now that Reed knows that Ben is going to live for almost 4,000 years, he's going to continue searching for some cure for Ben, just using mm-hmm. that as his drive for it in hopes of altering the timeline. But I doubt it's going to happen. I think Ben is going to live that long. It must really suck, too, when he transforms back into his human self in the 51st century for a day. What does he do?
Yeah. Oh, just totally decrepit with age.
Yeah, he's got nobody to hang out with. He's just an 80-year-old man. All of his human friends are gone. No Alicia. She's been dead for thousands of years.
Yeah, that is sad. That is sad. Yeah, can he even remember her name?
Ugh. Yeah, but that's the weird thing, though. Ben Grimm, to me, is more sympathetic now than he was before.
Yeah. It's certainly something. I mean, the dark angle to this might be that the criticism that Valeria and the Future Foundation had of Reed was that he was thinking of this as an all or nothing problem. And so in that spirit, maybe the thing Reed needs to find is not a cure, but a euthanasia option for Ben if he chooses to take it, which is very dark.
Here's what'll blow your head off.
Yeah. So we keep going to the 41st century, and let's see. That's the one where Ben is presiding over the graduation from the Future Foundation, right?
Right, yeah. And he's got this rock beard. He's got a rock beard.
Yeah,
which you took it as a rock beard. I took it as his rock skin on his chin is sagging.
Oh, okay.
But a rock beard's much cooler, but I don't know how a rock beard works that way. Like, I just thought maybe his rock had started to sag a bit around his chin.
This gets us into Hellboy territory, where in the movies, Hellboy has to saw down his devil horns.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a rock grow. I mean, rock continues to grow, but only through magma and stuff, rock being pushed up to form more rock. I don't know how that works with Ben. Like, I don't know.
So maybe Ben's internal organs are functioning as
shifting.
Magma. I don't know.
Yeah, or shifting. He's got his own plates inside his face that just shift and cause the... I don't know. There's a lot of weird science going on there that I don't understand.
I'm thinking of him having a very weird pickup line for Alicia that's something like, hey, baby, the tectonic plates are shifting.
Or Alicia's great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter.
Yeah, I think you just made that needlessly creepy, Matt.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. So in the 51st century, well, I think Franklin had already left in the 41st century, but Franklin's out being a god, basically. And so in the 51st century, Ben is lonely for Franklin. He's talking to the Fantastic Four statues, and he hasn't had a hamburger since the 36th century. So this is when Reed maybe really starts to feel guilty, yeah?
Yeah, this is when Reed is considering giving him the ultimate nullifier.
And then we jump 1,000 years more, and we have the 61st century. Ben's dead, and he's being mourned by Franklin, which was a very sweet scene.
4,000 years old.
I think that, Matt, this comic presents that as a terrible thing. A lot of science fiction does that. I'm happy to live. As long as I'm in relative comfort, I'm happy to live as long as I can. I see death as pretty much always a bad thing, and I'm absent. As long as that quality of life maintains, I'm happy to put it off for quite some time.
All right, Bob, we're going to put you in a rock form.
I mean, in some ways, I think I would temperamentally take the rock form a lot better than Ben.
That's what I'm saying, Bobby. It's one thing if you just lived to be 4,000 years old, but you're 4,000 years old as Ben Grimm is the thing.
Well, and I think Ben's personality isn't very well suited to outliving all of his friends and
handling that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas I like my friends, but I'm a cold, solitary man, and so I'm not so bothered. I'll think of you fondly, Matt, but not that often.
Oh, thanks, Bob. Makes my heart sore. Appreciate it.
So, Matt, where do you stand on this? Do you want immortality or just a longer life?
Yeah, I'd probably just prefer a longer life. I don't think I want immortality. I think that would just if I continue to age. That may be an issue if I am aging.
But yeah, but quality, assuming quality
stays
constant.
The same, maybe I could go for immortality then. Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to age up as much with the immortality piece. That to stick where I'm at right now.
Yeah,
or maybe a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we can't go much further until death starts seeming a relief. So right. we're about at the stopping point. The end of the issue is very sweet, though. It's Reed deciding to spend time with his friends. So it's Reed, Ben, and Bentley watching boxing. That was a very sweet ending.
Yeah, and I couldn't figure out which fight was going on, Bob, on the screen, because it's strange. As they took an actual boxing match, it just blurred it on the screen.
Yeah, it's so blurry that you can't really see anybody. It's 2012, so I was looking at a list of fights in 2012, and that fight where Martinez knocked out Pacquiao is 2012, although it's later in 2012, and this is earlier in 2012, so yeah. I don't know. Also, the way Ben describes it, it seems one of the fighters has a bad guy reputation, so it makes you think it's Floyd Mayweather or somebody, but I don't know if Mayweather had any big, I don't think he had any big fights in 2012. And I mean, some people dislike Manny Pacquiao, but I don't really think of Pacquiao as a bad guy, nor do I think of Martinez as a bad guy. So I'm not really sure what fight it should be. I don't know that much about boxing, though.
Yeah, it's two white guys, too, so it's probably not Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, were they white?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then it's not Pacquiao and Martinez because they're Filipino and Latino. So anyway.
Oh, well.
So, number 605.1's origin story. Matt, do you know the artist Mike Choi?
No.
He does a lot of covers. Sometimes I think he gets commissioned. I mean, I don't want to disrespect him because I think he's a good artist and I actually don't like Darwin Cook. But I think sometimes he's the Darwin Cook we have at home, if that makes sense. But again, Darwin Cook sucks and I much prefer Mike Choi's art, to be clear.
When you can't get Darwin Cook, you hire Mike Choi.
Yeah, but
he'll draw Nazi Fantastic Four.
Darwin Cook did before Watchmen, man. No respect. And I'm sorry he died young of cancer. That sucks. But in terms of output, Darwin Cook never did an original thing in his whole career. It's all just adaptations. He did that terrible New Frontier comic where Ted Grant beats Muhammad Ali in a boxing match. It's the most racist thing I've ever seen. I mean, not really, but still, it's so dumb. I hate that comic so much.
Yeah, that sounds pretty dumb, but
anyway,
Let's talk about this comic where the Fantastic Four are Nazis.
Yeah, but Mike Choi, best known for Kyle and Yost X-Force, Matt. That was the black-suited X-Force that came before Uncanny X-Force. Yeah.
Yes.
Not all of that, but some of that. So what's the plot of Origin Story 605.1, Matt?
Well, Bob, we experience the origin of the Fantastic Four on a Nazi-ruled Earth.
Yeah, Matt. So we have a bit of a fake out here. Did you fall for it? Were you initially, oh, this is going to be a boring origin issue? And then, oh, it's a boring origin issue on a Nazi Earth.
It's an Elseworlds issue, Bob.
Yeah. But in the sense that in Marvel, the Elseworlds actually impact the main timeline.
Exactly.
It fooled me too. When I started reading it, I remembered that it did this, but initially I was just, oh man, maybe we should drop this. It's just an origin story. Who cares? Yeah. And we have a lot of messed up stuff in this. We have Reed getting Ben out of a concentration camp since Ben is Jewish. We have Johnny and Sue as bloodthirsty Nazi sadist. We have Nazi Reed harvesting part of Doom's brain and then implanting it in his own. We have Nazi Reed setting Ben loose to kill Adolf Hitler and Johnny and Sue, although, I mean, to be clear, they all three have it coming. We then have Nazi Reed facing down Rogue and Magneto and many of the other heroes in this version of Earth and then destroying his universe with the Infinity Gauntlet.
You also have this really strange outfit they wear that has the three on the chest, which I guess it represents the Third Reich, but it could imply that Ben doesn't count as part of the team, and there's just three of the there's just the three of them, which that's really sad. Poor Ben.
Good job. Yeah, this is a very disturbing but very, very good episode or very good issue. The one thing I was a little confused by at the end. So at the end, the narration seems to me to imply that Nazi Reed is the founder of the Council of Reeds. And we find out that Nazi Reed is the bearded Reed, you know, because his beard grew while he was floating in the ashes of his destroyed universe for a long time. But so if the narration implies that Nazi Reed is the founder of the Council of Reeds, I would say the art more implies that Nazi Reed just joined the council, because the art makes it look the council was already there. Did that confuse you too a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, there's two of them there to greet him with their glove or whatever. So
yeah.
But it was already there. I think you're right.
Well, but the way he writes the narration, I think it really does imply that he's the founder.
Yeah. I don't know, Bob. It really changes, though, my whole view on the Council of Reeds, knowing that it was created by a Nazi.
Yeah. or even if it wasn't created by a Nazi, which I think I tend to favor the narration over the art here, but even if it wasn't created by a Nazi, the fact that one of its most visible members is a Nazi is a little eesh.
Yeah, that's really freaky. That changes the whole story, the previous story we read. Like, I want to go back and reread Volume 1 now, with knowing that that one's a Nazi.
Yeah, and it makes Valeria, what she does in 611, a little more ominous too, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. Wow.
Any other thoughts about the Nazi issue, Matt?
No, pretty good, Bob. Pretty much got it all covered.
All right. Thankfully, that has no relevance at all to contemporary politics or contemporary situation.
None at all.
Yeah, grateful for that lack of connection. We can move on to 606, Adventures in Red, back on Ron Garney art. What goes down in the plot and Adventures in Red?
Hold on, Bob. I want to follow what you just said there. Wouldn't it be hilarious if in the last page all the Reeds had MAGA hats?
That would be funny, Matt, but I think the greater force for Nazism in America is the current administration that's actively abetting a genocide. I think.
Are you trying to say, Bob, that I've been affected by the false narrative?
Look, man, I'm saying that I fully expect the Trump administration to make that to make the genocide in Gaza worse. But I'm just saying it's a Democrat genocide that right now is Israel literally could not be continuing the operation if we were not arming them.
So what if all the Reeds were drawn as Sleepy Joe? That would be even better, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is
a council of Sleepy Joes.
The Council of Sleepy Joes, man, Joes from across the multiverse. Oh God, so depressing. All right, 606, Adventures in Red.
The Fantastic Four goes on a dangerous mission in a hostile Red environment.
Nice. So, did the cover to this one give you flashbacks to last week's Celestial trying to fit through the portal of the bridge, Matt?
Damn, Bob, it really freaks me out that subliminally, I changed that to Red Government after reading about the Nazis. that freaks me out. All right, back to what you were saying. Yes, about the cover. So, yes, Bob, seeing the bridge, yes, did bring back those flashbacks to what the previous issues.
So what Matt's saying is he's getting both subliminal political and subliminal sexual messaging from these comics. That's what I'm hearing.
That's exactly what's happening with Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four run, Bob, yes.
So, yeah, this is a fun old school Fantastic Four as Star Trek thing. And then we have the reveal, right, that it's they're doing the movie Fantastic Voyage on Willie Lumpkin because he has some sort of brain cancer. Did you enjoy that reveal, Matt?
I did, Bob. And this whole issue just gave me a flashback to the old school cartoons, them going on a little adventure together. There wasn't a whole lot of crazy cosmic type stuff going on. Just they were trying to help their friend, and they just traveled somewhere in their little Fantastic Four.
Well, and that's the nice thing to me about the FF is their default plot shouldn't be the FF beat up the Mole Master, the Mole Man, or the Puppet Master, or the Wizard. The default FF story should be, a Star Trek plot, right?
Yeah, they're trying to help someone. They're trying to make things better.
So to keep things moving and make things better, number 607 is Inert. The art on this one is by Giuseppe Camicoli, who also did the next issue, 608, City of the Dead. He's probably most famous. He's Italian, obviously. Probably most famous for doing a lot of art on Superior Spider-Man. You read that, right, Matt?
I did read Superior Spider-Man, yes. Art's pretty good. I like the style.
Yeah, it's a fun style. It's a fun style. So what goes down in the plot of Inert?
So Reed thinks he's bringing the Future Foundation kids to Wakanda to a field trip and to economically advise the kingdom after the inertization of vibranium, but T'Challa actually needs Reed to accompany him on a knowledge quest into the underworld.
Yeah, and so this issue is happening in the context of Black Panther's own continuity. I've read a lot of Black Panther comics, most of them, but I have to shamefully confess I haven't read the ones that this is spinning out of. I believe it's an event miniseries called Doom War, and that previously on in this issue explains that in Doom War, T'Challa renders all the vibranium inert to thwart Doom, and then and for some reason, Shuri replaces T'Challa as the Black Panther.
Yeah, this has happened so many times now, it's getting a bit ridiculous.
What's the so many times?
Him getting replaced by Shuri and him losing his kingdom.
I think
his kingdom, but no longer being king.
Losing the crown is not an uncommon Black Panther plot. I think it happens in the Big Priest series, which is 60-odd issues. It happens in Doom War. It definitely we read the John Ridley Black Panther run last year. It happens in that. So that's a pretty familiar plot. This definitely was the first time Shuri was made the Black Panther, and she pretty much she's not always the quote unquote Black Panther going forward, but I think she stays very prominent because of this.
I will say that Shuri's outfit is way cooler here than the other outfits I've seen her in. Good design.
Yeah, it's good. It's good design. So an early bit in this I really loved is we see Bentley talking a lot of trash about T'Challa having lost his throne and then being very intimidated when he actually runs into T'Challa.
Yeah, Bentley always talking shit, Bob, but Bentley needs to watch it.
Apparently T'Challa seems more amused than anything and agrees to see if he can facilitate an elephant ride for Bentley.
Yeah, he handled that well. He could have gone off on Bentley, just smacked him if he wanted to.
Yeah. No one would have objected, least of all Val. Yeah. So we have a lot of flashbacks in this issue and the next issue that are doing Wakanda and Egyptian mythology, although that's not really the right word, because in the context of the Marvel Universe, it's this documentary filmmaking people. It's not mythology. But here we see Anubis, one of the Egyptian gods of the dead, if I'm not mistaken, the jackal-headed god, having defeated Amun-Ra, who's a version of the main god, the sky god, the sun god. So I really liked all these flashbacks of the Egyptian and the Wakandan gods. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, and you got this cat god with the boobies.
Yeah, we'll talk about her in the next one where she shows up. But yeah, that's Bast. I also really love the thing where T'Challa doesn't need Reed's advice about Wakandan economics. He's already been divesting from vibranium and investing the proceeds. And I will say two of my favorite uses of Wakanda are in Priest early aughts Black Panther series, and then the recent Jason Aaron Avengers series, which both give a semi-realistic look about if Wakanda were a real state and it were the world's superpower because of its vibranium reserves or because of the money it made off its vibranium reserves, the U.S. wouldn't deal with that very well, Matt.
Oh, no, they wouldn't. They would want to turn Wakanda into this democracy. They probably just pluck the vibranium from the people's hands if they have the opportunity. So they could sell it and make a fortune.
And by democracy, we mean that you have to run your economy like we say so, and you can't have any leaders we disapprove. That's what democracy means, Matt.
That's right. And your new leader, guys, Tony Stark.
Yeah, Tony Stark, president of Wakanda, baby. Did you have any thoughts on the moloid and the elephant mask?
No, Bob. No comment.
So
just a moloid being an animal.
Jeez, Matt, why are you so racist against the moloids? My God, just bringing the heat against the moloids.
They're all right, Bob. I love moloids. I'm all about the moloids.
Oh, man. Also in this line, I believe we had the debut of what's basically the catchphrase of Hickman's new Avengers series, Everything Dies. And between that and all the Wakandan death mythology in these two issues, it really is Hickman setting up his new Avengers. Matt, I know we need a long break from Hickman after this. Hickman's great, but 10 episodes is a lot. So we need a long break. But sometime we should tackle Hickman's Avengers run. It's very interesting.
Oh, I agree, and I'm down for that. I need a palate cleanse for a moment before we move into that.
Yeah, and by a moment, months.
Months, yeah. After reading all the Hickman X-Men and then all this, I'm a little Hickman belt.
Yeah. Maybe very late this year, or maybe 2025 might be the year we do Hickman Avengers. All right. So to keep going, the second part is City of the Dead. Same artist, number 608. What's the plot out of City of the Dead, Matt?
So while T'Challa and Reed visit Wakanda's City of the Dead, Shuri, Storm, and Sue go on a herb-assisted hunt for Anubis.
I knew herb-assisted hunt would trip you up. I knew it.
Herb-assisted hunt.
Yeah, it's a hard phrase. So this is also, I said it, the last issue was foreshadowing Hickman's new Avengers run, which this is Hickman's Fantastic Four run closing down. I believe Avengers versus X-Men is happening concurrently with this. And then we have Marvel Now launched after that, and Hickman does Avengers and Marvel Now. So what we're having here is foreshadowing of Namor with the Phoenix power flooding Wakanda in AVX. And Matt, you may remember that from a not great movie called Black Panther 2.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, Black Panther 2. So bad we didn't even review it, right? I don't think we did.
Yeah, I think we figured that we're sad Chadwick Boseman died, and we're sad that Marvel made a terrible movie to pay tribute to him, and so it was probably best just to not say anything at all about it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it was not that great. In fact, I really don't remember much about that film. That's when a Marvel movie's bad, when you don't remember anything from it months later.
Oh, I remember three things, one good and two terrible. The good thing is Maya Namor was pretty interesting. You got to give it up to Maya Namor, I think. The two bad things, one is just silly. The other is absolutely, I think, disrespectful. The silly thing is that it turns into an Iron Man movie with Shuri and all the Dora Milaje having armor in the climax, and it's so dumb. That sucked. I mean, why turn a Black Panther movie into an Iron Man movie? I don't get it. And then the other thing was, remember how they did the funeral for T'Challa at the start of Black Panther 2?
Yeah.
You remember how they then did a funeral for T'Challa's mother that went on, who the actress of whom is not dead, that went on far longer than the funeral for the star of the first movie? It was very strange.
That is very strange. Yeah, there was a lot of death in that film. I forgot about Angela Bassett's character dying, the queen. You think they wouldn't have killed two characters in that one film? That's just had two funerals. That's dumb.
It just cheapens the one they did, right? Yeah. It's so weird.
And that just seemed common sense. To go back to your Iron Man thing, Bob, when they look at these movies and they analyze them, they go, people like that last film where Iron Man did all that crap at the end of the film. Let's have him do it here in the Black Panther movie. That's literally the logic, I think, that just...
But I think it's just insane logic, not just because it's crossing the franchises, but people don't like the armor stuff in the Iron Man movies. They like the Iron Man movies because Robert Downey Jr. and Gwyneth Paltrow are charming. But nobody's, oh man, I really need to see Steve Rogers or Shuri in the same camera setup that I see Robert Downey Jr. in when he's in an armor suit.
How about Bruce Banner, Bob? Do you want him in an Iron Man suit?
No.
Do you want it horribly CGI'd?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Is it time to just euthanize the MCU? I think it's suffering.
Well, I mean, they did it to DC, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. All right. To get back on track, Matt. So this comic, we see Reed and T'Challa come before Bast, the panther goddess, right?
Right.
Like Matt says, she's Furry's dream. And then Bast basically assigns the new status quo for T'Challa. And so the status quo is that Shuri is going to be the queen of the living, and T'Challa is going to be the king of the dead and is going to chill in the city of the dead. And that's pretty much the Wakanda setup for all of New Avengers.
Oh, cool. I like that. Having technically two Black Panthers, but each handling one the living, one the dead.
Yeah. It is an interesting way to do it. And it is a compromise that Hickman likes a lot, that melding of two. You see that some in the Quiet Council stuff in the X-Men, and you see it later in the last issue, right, where Doom has science and magic in his kingdom.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. All right, Bob, so let's go to this next issue, which I'll have to say was not my favorite.
Yeah, so this is Godship number 609. All of the art from here on out is Ryan Stegman. Matt, do you recognize Stegman's name at all?
No.
He did the Donny Cates Venom series recently, which was pretty good. And then we're going to talk about him in a little bit because he's the artist for Jed McKay's X-Men book set in Alaska. So we're also recording our X-Men title previews today. Okay. So yeah, that's Stegman. Matt, this is going to be our shortest coverage of an issue because, I mean, it's Banner Jr. fights Ben, Spider-Man, and Johnny. You may remember Banner Jr. from the New World stuff earlier in this run, which is also from the Mark Miller, Brian Hitch run from right before Hickman's run. We didn't understand New World stuff then, New Earth stuff then. I don't understand it now. I don't get it. They do make a ship out of Galactus's corpse, future Galactus's corpse that they buried. Now it gets turned into a ship for the people from New Earth. So I guess that's cool.
That's the only cool part. I didn't really understand what's going on either, other than they were just building a ship out of Galactus's carcass.
Yeah, I really thought that they were gone. I forgot that they came back for this last time. I mean, maybe I should have actually read that Miller Hitch run, understood to be a responsible podcaster, but it was just so bad. I tapped out at the second, I think of the second page of the second issue. I just didn't want to keep going.
Well, less said the better, I guess, for issue 609, Bob.
Yeah, to a better issue, I thought. Also, art by Stegman, number 6010, entitled Wizard. What's the plot of Wizard, Matt?
So a rogue AIM faction under the Wizard buys out the nation of Barbuda. So Obama sends the Fantastic Five to intervene.
It's a real island in the Caribbean, but in the Marvel Universe, it's an independent nation. In our world, it's a nation of Antigua and Barbuda. Matt, usually Reed, not my favorite person in a room. Probably my least favorite member of the Fantastic Four. Not that I dislike him, just I like the other three more.
Oh yeah, they're more interesting.
But Matt, when the other people in the room are Captain America, Tony Stark, Hank Pym, and Barack Obama, well, Reed's my favorite person in that room because everybody else in that room is evil.
Yeah, I don't care for Captain America that much. Never liked Hank Pym at all. I'm okay with Iron Man, Bob.
Can I say an edgy joke, Matt?
Sure, Bob. Give me the edgy joke.
Reed Richards is the man in that room least likely to do a domestic violence.
Yeah. I mean, when you got Hank Pym.
And Tony Stark,
yeah. And I don't know.
Pretty sure they've both done DVs.
What about Barack Obama, Bob?
Well, Matt, I'm not saying I believe this, but if you believe that he drowned his cook in a very shallow pond in the Martha's Vineyard estate, which that actually did happen a couple of years ago. I'm not making that up. I'm not saying that Barack Obama drowned the man, but I'm saying their cook, I believe, was found drowned in a very shallow pond on their estate. So if you believe he did that, I think that would qualify as a form of domestic violence.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess you're right, Bob. Reed probably.
Captain America is basically a cop, Matt, and we know about cops.
Yeah, I don't like Captain America that much. He's not my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah, not my favorite either. Not my favorite either. All right, so to go to a science guy I actually do like, the guy who manipulates his way into being the leader of this rogue faction of AIM, or this the Scientist Supreme, you might call him, is Andrew Forson. We met him very early in the run, and yeah, he uses the fact that the wizard is obviously crazy and is obviously self-destructive to displace him as the leader of AIM Island, as he renames Barbuda.
Gotcha. Yeah, and this dude's got his outfit's weird. He looks like he's supposed to be something really cool, but he's not.
You're not a fan of Forson?
No, not really.
He's like a jacked up beekeeper, I think.
Yeah. He's got these weird comb things on his shoulders. Or is that supposed to be light? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I liked his line, first sovereignty, then more interesting things. That was a good line. But Matt, certain people share your prejudice against beekeepers, and those would be Johnny, Ben, and Spider-Man, as they're all bickering in the AIM canteen.
Yeah, they don't care for AIM. Especially considering they can't take their helmets off to eat.
And then at the end of this, we have a confrontation. Wizards in a cell. We have a confrontation. That actually turns into a cliffhanger that we'll get to next week. But we have Reed having a confrontation with the wizard. And then we have the wizard's errant son, a.k.a. clone, Bentley, having a conversation with the wizard. Speaking of DV, the wizard's in full DV mode. And like any good, bad Southern dad says to his clone son, "There's no escaping your nature, boy."
Yeah, Bentley, please don't put the helmet on. Don't do it.
Yeah, don't put the helmet on. Will he put the helmet on? We'll see next week. But in the meantime, our last issue of the main Fantastic Four series, although we still have a whole episode on Future Foundation, or FF, to go, but it's 611 called Foundation. Matt, what's the plot of Foundation?
Future Valeria rallies Reed and Nathaniel to save Doom from Doomworld.
Yeah. So did you like the early scenes of Doom basically reenacting the Book of Genesis, Matt?
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. It has every day, what he did, just beautiful.
But Doom doesn't get to rest, Matt. Some might say that's because he's a better god than God. Others might say it's because he's a worse god, because he doesn't make things stable enough where he can rest.
Yeah, Doom gets overtaken by his own creation.
Yeah. Like I said before, I really do like the parallel nature of Doomworld, where it reflects his interest in both science and magic. And in the end, we're left with the Reeds have tried to rule from the bridge. Doom has tried to rule from the bridge. Neither worked out. So now it's Future Valeria's turn.
Yep, and Future Valeria, she gets it figured out. She saves Uncle Doom.
Any overall thoughts about this volume, Matt, before we go into favorite dialogue and such?
Very, it's broken up into different pieces. It's not one continual story like we've seen the last couple of volumes. These are almost separate stories, each in of themselves, each highlighting a different aspect of the Fantastic Four. The last one was, the last issue, 611, was more about, even though Doom is the sworn enemy of the Fantastic Four in this case, they're able to come and they rescue him and make a big deal out of it, and Reed gets up in the middle of the night to save him. That's cool. You're seeing that sort of thing. But then go back all the way to 605, and there you're looking at spanning timelines and seeing Reed's relationship with the Thing, Reed's relationship with Ben, how that's impacted, and how he's having to be a better person to Ben now because he realizes that Ben's going to live forever. This is almost, in a sense, Reed's redemption in two of the issues, but then the rest of it is all just Fantastic Four going on just a little adventure to save their friend with a tumor, and then you had this New World thing, which I guess maybe back then that angst was okay.
I don't know if we would care about it if we had read the Miller run or not. I really
yeah, I don't get it. That's the one thing. It just sticks out like a sore thumb. And then the whole alternate issue where you're looking at, okay, this is what the Fantastic Four could have been had they not had the same origin story. You get a mixture of just different things going on here that don't necessarily fit all together, but they do fit together in the bigger picture, just not the bigger part of this volume.
And your Matt, are you just bitter that your prediction that Johnny Storm was evil after being in the negative
Johnny Storm zone? He can still be evil. That story is yet to be written.
You can say that because we spend almost no time on Johnny or Sue in this volume. It's all Reed. And with the first issue, 605, is about Ben, but you were saying it's more about Reed's relationship with Ben than Ben himself.
So are these just issues? Are these almost issues that Hickman just wanted to get out before the end of his run? The last volume we read was the end. This is almost the epilogue.
The last volume was the climax, and this was the epilogue. Some of this is setting, specifically the Black Panther two-parter and the AIM Island issue are setting up stuff he's going to do in Avengers. Then 609, that's the one with the Defenders of the Future or whatever. That's just house cleaning, right?
Right.
And I would say... yes, in a way, 605-1 is house cleaning, too, because it's just showing you one more facet of the Council of Reeds. And then...
Now 610, though, the Wizard Bible. Let's move it for real quick. 610, the Wizard, is it setting up a potential plot for Future Foundation? Is that in the next...
Well, no, it's a cliffhanger that Future Foundation will resolve.
In the next...
But the stuff that's... Okay. In the next trade... and you're also, I think you're going to see, if I remember correctly, two issues of Future Foundation what are the FF kids up to while the Fantastic Four is in Wakanda?
Yeah. Okay.
So, but the part that said it, the AIM Island stuff is set up for Hickman's Avengers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel there's some setup here, but there's also, he's setting things up for the rest of his run, but then he also brought everything back to the status quo by bringing Doom back from his issue, so.
Yeah, well, and he needs to tie off the Wizard and Bentley plot line. I would say 605 and 611 are probably the most important ones, right?
Oh, yes, for sure. They're the two issues. If you read those, I mean, you're good. Yeah. The rest is just filler. Yeah.
611 is a climax it's not as big as the climax in volume 5, but it's a climax for the run again. And then 605 is a thing Hickman always likes to do. He does it in a different form in the Avengers run, and then he definitely does it in House of X and Powers of 10, where you see the looping timelines. And I think if I'm remembering right, in Powers of 10, it's you go 10 years out, 100 years out, 1,000 years out.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas here, you just keep going millennia out, a millennia out, a millennia out.
All right, Bob. So let's talk favorite dialogue for these issues.
What was your favorite dialogue, Matt?
It was in issue 611, Bob. I was a god, Valyria. I found it beneath me. Doom referring to the world he creates.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. And then for me, one of my favorites, too. I think for me, I would go for 605. So upon seeing... a 41st century Ben who seems happy and proud, but also a little sad, a little disconnected. Reed says to Nathaniel, see what's wrong. What's wrong with that? Meaning what's wrong with Ben.
Yeah.
And Nathaniel's go home and Reed no further, which I think it's a good demonstration of the tragedy of this issue, because the further out you go, the sadder you see Ben is.
Yeah, he just keeps getting sadder and sadder.
It also speaks to the larger... Yeah, exactly. But it also speaks to the larger motive of the book, right? We began this run, or didn't begin it, but early in this run, we had Reed giving the speech at the Aspen Ideas Festival, berating everybody for being backward-looking, right? And so Reed always wants to go further, but that's not always a good thing.
Right. Well, Bob, my favorite visual comes from issue 611, which it's where the Doombots are walking on Reed's back to save Doom from the Leviathan.
Yeah, that's a very funny visual.
Yeah.
For me, I was a little torn. I liked the first page of 607. You have T'Challa and Storm looking very good, very fine. So that was a possibility. Or on 608, I really did love the image of T'Challa on his knees before Bast. I thought that was very cool. Matt, do you have any thoughts on on Storm and T'Challa as a couple. This is right before they get a divorce in AVX.
I always liked it. I thought it was a neat spin with the X-Men piece. Anytime you bring the X-Men to something else in Marvel property, I think it's cool.
Yeah. I think I dig it too. Certainly in Jerry Duggan's Marauders, they did some good things with Storm and Panther being X's. All right, Matt. What was your favorite issue of these? What was it? 7?
Yeah, 611 was my favorite. I mean, I really think it's between 611 and the first issue, 605.
Okay. I can definitely see that. Those are two of the strongest ones. I really like the Wakanda two-parter, though, in part because I've read New Avengers, so I get to do the Leo meme. I'll say 608. But yeah, 605 and 611 are tremendous, too.
All right, my favorite character, I am going with Ben Grimm, the Thing, just because that's how sympathetic of a character he is, even more so now. I just feel bad for him.
Yeah. Although, like we said, that's wholly driven by 605, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. For me, I'll give it to T'Challa, but there's a lot of great Reed and Val stuff in this trade, to be sure. So I'll say T'Challa, but easily could have been Reed or Val. All right. So next time we're wrapping off the Hickman run. We're doing the fourth volume of Future Foundation, or you could call it Fantastic Four by Hickman 7. We can finally get off the decimals. The title is You're Whatever You Want to Be. It's FF Volume 1 or Future Foundation 17 through 23. And we will look forward to seeing you there, dear listener.
Thanks for listening.